The Koivic Pod on Off the Ball.
It just takes away a little bit from the women's game. Like, we want to be treated like the men's game. We are growing at a reasonable enough pace that, yes, you can expand the league, but do two up, one down.
Subscribe to the Koivic Pod on the Off the Ball app now.
You're listening to OTB's Breakfast Bite. Yeah!
Philippe, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Good morning to you too.
Arne Slot says it was one of the best games that he's ever been involved in. The best game he's ever been involved in. It's pretty high quality stuff that we're seeing at this stage of the tournament.
Yes, it was rather good. And it was not the only great game we saw that night, because I don't know if you had the privilege of watching Barcelona really laying out the red carpet and walking on it against Benfica. It was magnificent. But that was... It was a proper game of football, very, very high level. I must say the intensity of it was quite, I mean, literally breathtaking, and took the breath away, not just of the spectators of ourselves, but also of the players who finished absolutely, they finished on their knees, but you can understand why. It was really very, very high octane, high level football, yes.
I guess Luis Enrique gets a lot of the credit, but so too do the young individuals who are driving this Paris Saint-Germain team forward. Can you talk to us a bit about the makeup of this team and how they have transformed from the previous kind of flaky teams that Paris Saint-Germain had?
Well, they've transformed into a team that looks very much like, more like its manager, who was a tough player himself. And yes, the stars have gone. Neymar has gone. Messi has gone. Kylian Mbappe has gone to Real Madrid. And when you look at the players who were perhaps the best on the pitch yesterday, I mean, they are not names that you would normally have expected to perform so well at this type of level at the beginning of the season. And I'm thinking in particular, because everybody will talk about Dembele, and I'm sure we'll talk about Dembele in this strange late transformation of the man who misses everything to the man who scores everything. But I think if you're looking at heroes, apart from Donnarumma, but I think we were aware of the fact that he was rather good in this kind of penalty situation. I think that there are two names which really sprang out for me last night, as they have actually for a while, which is Pacho, the Ecuadorian, who only arrived at the summer, and I don't think that anybody was expecting him to perform at this kind of level. He was immense in central defence alongside Marquinhos. And Nuno Mendes, I think, who's got a good claim to be perhaps the best left-back on the planet at the moment. We all knew that he was absolutely terrific going forward. So much pace, great technique as well. But what we saw over the two legs, it should be said, not just what happened at Anfield last night, is that he was confronted with perhaps the best player in the world. For me, he is Mohamed Salah, who is having an absolutely astonishing season. And apart from a couple of wobbly moments at the beginning of the game, he kept him mostly, it's impossible to do it completely, under wraps. And this is the second time he's done it. So we're talking about very young players, and you can add Vitinha, the Portuguese midfielder, who again is not one of those players that everybody will be thinking of when you think about PSG. You know, Barcola, who's arrived from Lyon, and whom we haven't seen the absolute best in this particular game, but believe me, he's a future fixture in the French national team. And then you've got the other ones who have just come in, Kvaratskhelia, who was terrific in the first leg, perhaps not as prominent in the return leg, but still incredibly. I think that actually his performance was not extraordinary in an attacking sense, but there were a couple of occasions, some very, very difficult moments or tricky moments for PSG late in the game, where he was there. And it's the solidarity of this team is absolutely astonishing. I'm not sure. And I would like to hear what you have to say about that. If that Liverpool team has often been confronted with this kind of intensity, I cannot remember any Liverpool player being given any time of the ball, on the ball, at any stage in the game. Even when they were dominating, they had to play so quickly, so fast. And Yes, absolutely. Luis Enrique must take a lot of the credit for that. But what he's doing with a group of young players who don't have any of the hang-ups of the previous generation. And the result of it is that it was one of PSG's greatest nights in Europe. I mean, I don't know if it was the greatest night, but certainly one of the top five.
Coming soon to your Off the Ball podcast feed.
I'm nervous and police will use tear gas.
Yes. Oh, Jesus.
You're looking at two of the best professional wrestlers in Mexico City.
Saying we won after your team's won a football game is like saying I had sex after I'm watching porn.
So if you hear anything about the Gringo Loco, that's me, okay?
We were on our own at 3,600 meters.
We have that mark as narcos, cocaine, violence, as a Pablo Escobar thing.
To be honest with you, if I never see Route 40 again, I will be a happy, happy man.
Diverted. A 10-part Off the Ball original series telling the story of sport and other things all the way through Latin America.
I thought Ruta 40 was the most lonely road in the world. Turns out Ruta 25 is somehow even lonelier.
Available soon for free on the OTB app.
We've got a very special treat now because I'm delighted to welcome Donald McRae to the programme to talk to us about his new book, The Last Bell, Life, Death and Boxing. Donald, good morning to you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm well, thank you. How are you both?
Yeah, great. Can you talk to us a bit about the difference between your approach to this book, which is very highly personal, and maybe some of your earlier books?
Yeah, I guess the obvious counterpart to it would be Dark Trade, which I wrote in the sort of mid-1990s. And that book featured people like Mike Tyson and James Toney, Chris Eubank Jr., quite unusual figures. And I was full of excitement to be close to them and to be following them. This book, The Last Bell, you know, it's almost 30 years later. I'm obviously different. I'm older. I'm a bit more jaundiced, having seen the business of boxing become even darker. So I think the big difference between those two books is that this book makes a distinction between boxing, which I still love because I admire the fighters. And I love going to the best fights. But the distinction is between boxing and the business of boxing, which is a dirty, dark business, which to me is sort of almost worse than it's ever been.
That's an interesting point because I was going to ask, like, you know, you watch On the Waterfront and you realise that the mob's control of boxing stretches back ad infinitum.
Absolutely, yeah.
I wonder, are you more aware of it now than you were when you were writing Dark Trade, or do you genuinely think it's got even worse than then, which, you know, it was pretty lawless back then?
Of course. I mean, it's such a good point. If you go back to the 1920s, 30s, 40s, especially in the US, yeah, as you say, boxing was in charge. In the stranglehold of the mob. Dark Trade, I think even the title implies that I don't turn away from the corruption and the damage of boxing. I knew it was there, but I think I used to kind of laugh along with Don King, who would be shafting fighters and had killed a man, but, you know, he would misquote Shakespeare, and it all seemed quite amusing. But over the last 6 years, which is where The Last Bell is set, it was hard to be tickled by the Kinahans, for example. You know, a $1 billion drug empire. There's not much frivolity or lightness to be found in what they have done and the way they took over boxing. And certainly doping has become more and more prevalent. Perhaps in the 1990s, time of Dark Trade, it wasn't exposed as much. But clearly, I think now, I speak to a lot of fighters who would say 70% of professionals are doping. And then we've had the Saudis taking over boxing. So I think the accumulation of all those things mean it is actually a bit more diseased than it's ever been.
Hi, Donald.
Hi.
Would you say that you still have pride in the sport that you've made a career from and such an esteemed career?
That's a good question. And yes, I think I do. One of the least known figures in this book is called Isaac Chamberlain. He's not a particularly well-known professional boxer, but as a little boy aged 11 in South London, his job then was to deliver drugs, crack and cocaine on the streets of Brixton. And it's such a corny cliche, boxing saves people. But in Isaac's case, it did. His mother took him down to the gym when he was 12, just to get him off the streets. And he fell in love with boxing. And I'm kind of proud of Isaac because he's found a new way of living. But yeah, there's also pages in that book where Isaac loses a European title fight to Chris Billam Smith. And I'm walking down the corridor towards a waiting ambulance holding Isaac's hand. He's on a stretcher about to go to hospital. So that pride is kind of always compromised by sort of an awareness of the damage that boxing does. So it's kind of a complicated feeling that I've been tussling with for 50 years and explains the white hair and the haggard look, I think.
To listen to this morning's full Off The Ball breakfast, become a member at offtheball.com/join now.